Class is back in session, and HyperX has the grade A gear you need for dorm life, remote classes, and for schooling folks online. Shop the HyperX back to school deals going on now at HyperX.com to help make your return to student life a breeze. Comfortable cloud headsets can keep you focused in as you cram for finals with some lo-fi beats, and stay productive with lightweight Pulsefire mice, responsive alloy keyboards, and more. Keep your GPA and your KDA high with HyperX products and accessories.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Chat of the Wild is part of the HyperX Podcast Network. To find out more information and other great shows, go to podcast.hyperx.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Chat of the Wild. In this episode, we've got a special guest with us. Mike Lane from the GameCube Was Cool podcast will be joining us to talk about GameCube games, specifically Zelda GameCube games. You might be thinking there's just like maybe one and a half. There's actually at least three we could talk about. I'm Jeremy Harvey. We've got Brian Auer here.
Hi. That's and my name.
Mike, say hello.
Hello. Welcome. Thank you.
Yes. Well, yes. Welcome.
But yes, thank you very much for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. And excited to talk about some Zelda games on the GameCube. You're right. There's more than just one.
Right. And there, I mean, we could get into a few other things, like maybe some that didn't even release. And actually, you just unlocked something in my brain, man, because I'm now thinking, do we talk about all the Zelda games that you could play on GameCube? Because that list gets even longer. Not just Zelda GameCube games, but Zelda games you can play on GameCube. Brian is whipping out like his promotional
right here.
Disc. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess
and
before
a Master Quest.
Mike, why don't you go ahead and explain your podcast to our listeners before we get going?
For sure, yeah. So I host or co-host a podcast called The GameCube Was Cool, and we basically are trying to go through every single North American GameCube game release. So that's 555 games. Sometimes we do episodes just one game at a time. Sometimes we'll do a whole bunch together, and that'll be maybe, you know, 5, 6, even 12 games. There's a lot of movie tie-in games on the GameCube, right? So we got to get through a lot of them sometimes. But we are going to be putting out an episode very shortly, which is just going to be one game, and that's going to be Zelda Four Swords Adventures. So that ties in really well with this podcast today.
Yeah, for sure. That is a game that we have talked about. We're not necessarily like, it doesn't fit with what we do because there just isn't really a story there, you know? So for us to like talk about it, it's weird for one of those because we obviously acknowledge it. It's not like it's some weird black sheep in
count.
This group, right? Though in some ways it kind of is because it was like one of the first Zelda games that just didn't care about a story or anything like that. They were just like, we're just going to make a fun Zelda spinoff. And we hadn't really had those. Now if Nintendo announced a similar game, it wouldn't be that surprising.
No, it's true. I mean, now we see that everywhere. Like Triforce Heroes is kind of an example of a different style of game from Four Swords Adventures, which I don't know if you guys have played Triforce Heroes. I do not like that game at all. But Four Swords Adventures was actually a really good game with just a massive barrier to entry, which was too bad because for those who don't know, because I didn't really know that much about this game before I started researching it, you needed... you could have played the game single player with just one GameCube controller, but to have friends come over and play it, they needed to bring their Game Boy Advances and their Game Boy Advance cables to connect to the GameCube, which of course everyone had.
and not just the link, it wasn't just the link cable, it was the actual Game Boy to GameCube
cable. That's right.
Which was a different thing entirely.
Can you imagine explaining that to a parent?
Like, I had to explain it to mine multiple times of like, yeah, like it, all the different things where, you know, they were like, well, you have that system. And I was like, yeah, but I need the Game Boy. And they're just like, well, actually, no, I take that back. Game Boy was like the first system I bought on my own. I saved my money up for that thing.
Nice.
But with that, I was like, oh, I need to get this cable here. And they were like, don't you already have that cable that connects to your brother's Game Boy? And I'm like, no, it's not that cable. I need this cable here so that we can play together on this system here. And they were like,
accessories,
okay, whatever.
Mom.
Yeah, it was $15, whatever.
Then you had to have friends.
Oh, that's what we were saying. Triforce Heroes was where it was stupid too, right? Because there were some quests that you couldn't actually complete unless you had three people, and exactly three mm-hmm. people to complete them. So dumb. And Four Swords was a little bit that way, where it was definitely meant and QA'd to be played with four people, and like kind of the entire gameplay revolves around that. But it's still a fun game to play single player, but you're totally right. It's not, the story isn't there. Apparently there are like mangas though for Four Swords that were put out that mm-hmm. are mm-hmm. supposed
I would
to be
read
really
that.
Good.
Yes. That sounds awesome. Four Links.
All the different personalities, you know, and it's kind of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles a little bit.
Nice.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at least Four Swords has dungeons, which is something we try and look at. Do they differentiate them very well from each other? They're not themed like a normal Zelda setup. I've never really played Four Swords at all, so.
Yeah, neither had we really until a couple weeks ago to get ready for it, because it's one of those games, it only sold 800,000 copies, which is abysmal. You know, if you take into account, like, Wind Waker sold about 6.6 million. Twilight Princess, I think, sold 8 million total, you know, between the Wii and the GameCube. So 800,000. Breath of the Wild on Wii U sold double that. So, like, that is just
damn,
a horrible amount. And it's because of the marketing, right? They couldn't actually explain to people why they needed to buy this game to tide them over until Twilight Princess would eventually come out. But yeah, there are dungeons.
Yeah.
And they are pretty, like, they actually did a pretty good job with variety. Like, again, the game is good. It's just a huge barrier to entry. And there's other games on the GameCube. Like, there's other Zelda games, like Wind Waker and Twilight Princess, that are objectively better. So it's like, gets lost in the dust.
Yeah, I always think back on the visuals of that game, and it's really interesting because they basically take a Link to the Past visuals, smooth it out, make it higher res, mm-hmm. but then also do layering with like intense shadows.
That's right.
And it gives this almost it's really hard to explain, but when you see it in action compared to the other games, it's actually really good to look at.
Well, all the animation too is actually taken straight from Wind Waker. So mm-hmm. whenever there's bombs or things blow up, it's got that toon style animation.
And it's all actually in 3D.
Yeah.
Like, everything is actually rendered in 3D, but you only ever see it from, like, an above-head view.
Yeah, it's a really cool development concept. Like, it would have taken a long time to actually flush that out. And, you know, it's another example of the GameCube era where Nintendo wanted to take risks. Like, that was a pretty risky game to make. Obviously, it failed because they only sold 800,000 copies, but it still was a risk worth taking, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think people just didn't get the, or it felt like it was too much of a hassle to get, because didn't you also need the Game Boy Advance copy of A Link to the Past to make this work?
No. Luckily you didn't need that, but that would have been a little too much.
it would have been, absolutely.
Yeah.
Nintendo would have done it. I'm sure there was a board somewhere where it said, they're gonna buy it. We're Nintendo. Mm-hmm. They will pay for it.
It's Zelda. Everyone buys Zelda.
Yeah, but you see them messing around with this, like, asynchronous multiplayer, too, with Pac-Man Fever later. But it seemed like Miyamoto really
Pac-Man
wanted to
versus.
Use this. Or Pac-Man Versus, yeah.
Not Pac-Man, Pac-Man Fever.
Oh, and, yeah, so, like, you could see him think, like, this is really cool. It's just kind of a pain for everyone to get set up and get into and get excited about. And it's also tough to show people, you know, those experiences and have them get it.
You can't really watch gameplay for it. Like, it doesn't do it justice at all. You don't really understand what's mm-hmm. going on. And it really is too bad that it came out the time it did. Like, if it came out today for the Switch, or even, I mean, it basically is an early Wii U. So, like, if it had come out for one of those consoles, it, I think, would have fared a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll see by the time this episode comes out, but I'm always throwing out predictions, and I've recently had this vision pop into my head of us getting a new Four Swords game announced this year, with Breath of the Wild 2 being delayed out. There's going to be like some Zelda thing. I still like, I don't
highly
think
came
any...
to you in your sleep.
Of course, yes, as she does.
Yeah.
And so I'm anticipating something like that. Since
That'd
we're talking
cool.
about this, I think it's worth bringing up, even though this game did not come out, at least here in the States, Tetris Trackers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This was a game that was announced at the same time as Four Swords Adventures.
That's right.
And it was something that eventually, I believe it came out as Navi Trackers.
Yep.
Tetra would tell you where things were, and then you were fighting other people to find it and then take it, I believe. I've only seen a few things. Again, this is something that didn't ever actually like get fully released the way they were talking about it, because it was supposed to be like, that was going to be like on the disc with it. It was going to be like a multi-game disc that had Four Swords Adventures and Tetris Trackers. And mm-hmm. then maybe it did. I mean, do you know if that actually was bundled with something? I guess I'm a little foggy on that.
Yeah, so what ended up happening, or the idea at first, was to have Tetris Trackers, the Hyrule Adventure, and then Shadow Battle, which ended up being included, which was like a kind of a multiplayer battle royale style that they kind of just had mm-hmm. to put in because there was multiplayer in this game.
Well, I mean, you have to have multiplayer at that point in video gaming too.
Yes.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Everyone is looking at the back of the box to see, is there multiplayer?
But yeah, Tetris Trackers ended up being at Navi's Trackers. And the really interesting thing about that was that it actually ended up having full voice acting in that game. Mm-hmm. And so Japanese only, never got a North American release. And the reason most people speculate why is because it not only had voice acting, but it also had, I guess, text recognition. So you could put in Japanese characters for your name, and Tetra would be able to string together the characters to say your name.
Okay. I could see how that'd be possible in Japanese, yes, but yeah, no.
And I'm sure they were like, you know what, guys? This is not worth it at all to have this like small, basically minigame style mode to be in Four Swords. Let's just release it as is. And that's kind of what happened.
Mm-hmm. It's a shame. Yeah. Tetra needs more work.
Tetra voice acting is weird, though. And Tingle talking is even weirder, because he's in that game. And that's something the world doesn't need.
I can do without
disagree.
That.
Hard disagree.
No, he's wrong.
The Tingle apologist has entered the room.
We were on a show last, like over a year ago, talking about Breath of the Wild, and someone tried to criticize Beetle, and the whole room erupted and was like, what are you talking about? Like, everyone like was on this dude for suggesting any ill will towards Beetle. And I recently within the last year playing Breath of the Wild, sometimes I have a beetle on me, and I only recently started using them in potions. I would always just give him my beetles when I had them. He gets mad at you. He gets, like, super, like, malicious towards you if you do not hand over a beetle for, like, some really bad trade. It's really awful. Huh. Beetle, stop it.
I didn't know
so that. So I kind of get it, but yeah, pretty much every other instance, I'm a big Beetle fan. So
hey, Beetle is an entrepreneur, all right. You know, he's a small mm-hmm. businessman trying to feed his
he's
family.
He's out there.
Yeah, he's out there.
Door to door.
Door to door salesman. You know, he's on the front lines.
Yeah, it's true. You know, one of the best, most comprehensive customer service programs. You know, membership programs that there is.
Great rewards.
Great rewards, the best.
So getting us back on track, we did kind of hop around a little bit here. Why don't we go ahead and hit rewind a little bit to the first Zelda game on GameCube with
I gave you the perfect segue. We're talking about Beetle.
With Wind Waker. And this game I still have vivid memories of seeing that first trailer and immediately being in love with it.
Now, you're talking about the cel-shaded trailer, not the trailer from 2000 Space World, where they showed off basically HD
Well,
HD
okay,
Ocarina.
You know what? You know what? Let's address it, because I also have memories of that as well.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
It did not look nearly as good as what Wind Waker did. Like, I mean, if you look back at it now, it is very much the graphic card tech demo looking kind of thing. Like, we mm-hmm. can look at it now and be like, that's not a video game. At least the thing we saw with Wind Waker was like, that's a video game.
It's like, at least it looks better than the end of the Power Rangers movie when they CG'd the monster. Like, yeah, it looked pretty rough, but I pored over those screenshots, man.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it was, so I was too young to remember the Space War. I remember when Wind Waker came out, obviously, but I don't remember the initial criticism and everyone going nuts when it, you know, was, Wind Waker wasn't what people had seen at Space World. But I mean,
yeah,
I think they went the right way, but for business, they probably didn't in retrospect, because GameCube was the mature console. It was specifically trying to be sold to teens, and it was trying to be, you know, their whole, I think their motto was like getting back our gamers. They're like, you know, it was supposed to be, you know, going back to the roots, no more kiddie kind of style games. It was, they made a big effort to have a lot of mature titles on this system and a lot of mm-hmm. third party support, in quotes. That's what Nintendo always tries to do, and they never really get it, except for the Switch. So, you know, we got that. And the GameCube at the beginning, there was a lot of third party support at the beginning and a lot of, partnerships with publishers like EA, for example, had actually for once had a good partnership with Nintendo for like 2 years.
they would generally get that out of the gate, where they'd get, you know, Ubisoft putting a bunch of stuff on there, you know, throughout the years, all the way up to the Wii U, and then people kind of walk away eventually when they don't want to deal with the hardware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is what happened with the GameCube relatively. But yeah, so that definitely hurt them when they went for this like kind of kiddie style, is what people thought of, like cartoonish style, rather than this edgy. Because it was almost against the brand at that point. It almost feels like Twilight Princess was the game that was meant to be put out in 2003, and Wind Waker would have fit more with the 2006 Wii. You know, we're going more family friendly again. So that kind of in the alternate universe timeline would have probably worked a bit better. But I'm very happy they did actually put Wind Waker out, because it's one of my favorite games ever.
The backlash was way overblown, because it just looked great, and it was a fun game. But yeah, I was there, man, in the in the hallways and in the classrooms, when hashing it out with people who, the GameCube, Nintendo continued to be derided as a kiddie company, and I pushed back on it vehemently.
good.
I wasn't having any of it.
You have to combine the era of the internet that was going on at that time too. Like, for me, I align like perfectly with where the internet discourse was like exploding in certain places, where like every website had comment sections now.
Yeah.
And so you would go to your IGN and you would see them put this postcard, you know, size video, or sorry, a stamp size video on there, and then just hundreds of comments of people talking about how bad it looks, and it's not for, you know, it's not for us mature
Zelda.
Teenagers.
Zelda. Like, yep.
Yeah, and so you had this boom going at that time, where if we didn't have that, if things lined up just a little differently, I think it would have been fine, and we may have gotten more of that, because sales-wise, it did fine, right? It's not like the game bombed from there. It was enough that they were like, we're going to keep this going on our other system that's also selling like crazy right now. So we want to keep that style going and get the people that like that game to keep playing this here. You know, we just got done with the DS Zelda games, and those were not good. And actually are very, very sad that they kind of like did that to our boy.
But just Tetra getting the shaft at every turn, man.
Yeah, us never actually getting more of Tetra like what we wanted.
other than Tetris trackers. That's all we can hold on to.
Hyrule Warriors. She is fun to play in that for sure.
Okay, yeah.
So there's that.
This is a good example of like the Zelda cycle. I'm sure you guys have mentioned this in the show before, but you know, the whole idea is as time progresses, negative opinions about Zelda turn into positive ones. And that's kind of the Wind Waker is the perfect example of that. Even Twilight Princess. Like Twilight Princess, a lot of people, when it came out, I really loved it when it came out, but a lot of people were like, it's okay. And, you know, when the HD remaster came out, people were like, yeah, Twilight Princess was one of my favorite games. It's like, well, I don't know if you said that 10 years ago, but.
Yeah, you know.
And it always depends on if you're talking about, like, consumers versus people that were reviewing it. Because it's almost the opposite, where if you look at reviews of old Zelda games, they always were really high. And then part of what we've been doing is going through these, and I try to keep any kind of rose-tinted, goggles off my face whenever I can with this stuff. And a lot of times I tend to try to find some things where I'm like, this doesn't hold up anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Where like, I try to avoid the, at the time, it was this, so therefore you cannot criticize it. We're like, no, we have gone beyond this, where if you're like reviewing these games now, you're taking them down a few points for sure. But yeah, then you have the nostalgia of everyone else, where, you know, at the time, depending on what situation they had in their own personal life, where this game would come out, and maybe it was frustrating if they were younger, they couldn't figure certain things out, but still, like, they got through it, and they forget the struggles, and they just look back at, like, the key moments, especially in, like, a Wind Waker, where they have a couple of these moments here and there that, like, really stand out, but then you tend to forget how much fat was in between those things.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, just traveling. Like, I mean, that's like half the game is traveling and doing the shard quest or whatever that takes forever. And, like, there's a lot of these things that, you're totally right, Jeremy. You forget about it because the game itself was so charming and there was so much to love about just being in that world that, you know, every time you come back to it, you're like, okay, yeah, that's right. I do like this a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something weird about Wind Waker. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it is. I think we tried to quantify it when we covered it, but you can hear, like, the first 10 episodes, well, the first, for some of us more than others, but, like, yeah, we're having the best time. Like, we'll just be like, we got our boat this episode. It took us 3 episodes to get to the open ocean, but I am loving it and just having a great time. And the more you check off in that game, you start to, like, just get a lot of repetitive content, I guess, on the different islands. And, like, it starts to wear thin towards the end. And it's really odd, but you do remember, you don't remember those parts. You remember the, like, yes, sailing is great. And if you nail good sailing, it's so good in that game. Oh, man. Like, it goes a long way, like with the Phantom Hourglass. The sailing is just not fun, and it wears that game down real fast. But yeah, I can look past a lot of things in Wind Waker if I'm having a good time.
I would say it's the charm. I think Wind Waker is the most charming Zelda game.
Yeah.
I have always looked at the best Zelda games are the ones that get weird. Because you want more character in these things that break it apart from other high fantasy action adventure kind of games. It's not just about you fighting monsters with a sword. It's about meeting interesting people. It's about having these interactions with them. And it's about, like, finding unconventional things. And Wind Waker had a lot of that in there, but it wasn't necessarily tied to its gameplay. Like, the gameplay itself was actually fairly standard. And even the weapons, that was my biggest criticism, is that what we call our traversal items in the Zelda games, you didn't really get anything special in this one. Like, the closest thing that you had was the grapple hook, which was just sort of a neutered version of a hook shot. And so you didn't actually have, in terms of gameplay, the things you're actually doing with your hands and the controller, isn't as interesting as some of the other Zelda games, even the ones before it with Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. You're not actually doing interesting things in there. You're just meeting a lot of really interesting people. And that is something that maybe makes it stick in people's minds for so much longer, is that you just have the memories of the characters, of hearing those voices of the, hey, and the sploosh, and like all these little things. And those last longer than the frustrations you may have had of wrestling with wonky controls.
Absolutely.
And a inverted x-axis.
Right, yes.
Yes, yes. I mean, that was, there were a lot of games back then that had that, which is just unfortunate.
Yeah.
But when you play it again today, it's like, okay, I just get used to it. Because playing Wind Waker again, you know, I guess last year when we covered it, I was surprised that, because we've been playing so many old games to cover all 555, and most of them do not hold up today, like at all, for sure.
Right,
but Wind Waker, you know, just was still 10 out of 10 in terms of how it looked, how it played. Like, everything about that game just made me smile so much to go back to it, because I hadn't actually gone back to the GameCube version probably since like 2005 or something. So that was really, really cool to be satisfied with that version still.
Mm-hmm. Did you plug the Tingle Tuner in?
I wish I had that.
It was, yeah, it was OP, because I played through that with my brother. We would go back and forth, and just being able to just bomb things whenever,
yes,
was it just made everything so much easier there. And it's so weird that they did that stuff, and I miss it. I really do miss that era of the strange asymmetrical gameplay. Like, we had that for a very short while with the launch of the Xbox One. They had that smart glass stuff that you'd be able to interact with their games on there, but it was still just done so poorly. It was not advertised well. I'm sure there were problems with
just
the
app
itself.
Just like
the
Wii U, yeah.
Yeah.
Did it poorly, and it wasn't advertised well.
But I miss it. Yeah, that was really fun to do that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny. My first time playing Wind Waker wasn't even actually playing the main, like, the GameCube game itself. I played it on the Zelda Collection game, because there was a demo on there.
Mm-hmm.
And that collection is awesome for so many reasons. But playing up that Wind Waker demo is really long. Like, there's a lot to explore, and there's like a lot to do. You can, because I think it's timed, if I remember correctly. So if you're smart enough, and if you played it enough, like I did when I was a kid, you could get through a lot of Wind Waker just in that 30 minutes or whatever, however long it was.
Do they start you at like three different places? Like, you can choose.
You can choose, yeah, yeah. So you can basically, and I think you get 30 minutes for each one, basically. But you can go to different worlds from there still. Like, so you can, if you knew the map well enough, you could get it. You could, like, basically speedrun the demo disc.
Yeah. Which people have done that with the, 5-minute demos in Brawl, was it, I think?
Okay.
It would let you play like a game for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
People have beaten Ocarina on that thing.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's something like that. Brian, you'll need to do some research on that. If there's a speedrunning crowd for that demo disc.
For a little promo buddy here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll check that out. That'd be a good thing to... I'll see if Linkus has done that. I'm sure he has.
I love that disc so much. That's so, my parents got me the GameCube with that bundle. So I was lucky enough to get that.
Oh, okay.
When I guess that would have been 2003. I guess probably, yeah, December 2003 is when I got it. And yeah, I had so much fun playing that constantly, because I don't think I had any games yet. I think they just got me that and maybe Double Dash. And
right.
Yeah, just play through it. And I'm pretty sure they didn't buy me a memory card.
Nope.
Because yeah, nope. That was
yep.
The GameCube was my first system, actually, because they didn't let me play, or they didn't, my parents didn't let me have home consoles, because we had a PC. So their thing was like, right, well, you can already play games on your computer, why would we get
solitaire.
You a home console? Yeah. Why, we have Roller Coaster Tycoon, why would you need anything else?
I mean, honestly, okay. No, of course. Like, that's true. You could get through life. I could get through life on Roller Coaster Tycoon alone, probably.
And I had a Game Boy Advance SP, and I had, you know, had a Game Boy Color and everything. So for me, I didn't really need a home console. I was like, I'm good. I got my SP.
Yeah.
Brian, get that disc back. What's all on that disc? I want to talk about that for a second.
One and two and the 64 ones. And playable demo of Wind Waker.
Yep.
And that was that the pre-order one or was that the Nintendo Power one?
This was not a pre-order one.
Just a bundle.
Yeah, I forget how I got this.
And it has not.
I didn't get it with a system.
I think it says not for resale on the front too, which I always thought was funny.
Yeah. Which people have resold that
many times.
Oh yeah, it's super. Yeah, I mean that thing goes for well over $100 at this point.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's funny. I didn't know when I started the podcast again. I was looking for a couple of GameCube games that I didn't know where they were, and I asked my mom. I was like, "Do you know where like that Zelda game is?" She's like, "Oh, when you moved out, I put it locked up because I figured it was going to be like worth something because it said not for resale on it." I was like, "Thanks, mom."
Oh, hey, how nice. My aunt seemed to have held on to my copy for 16 years because when I opened up the box full of video games, I was like, "Hey, how you doing?"
Isn't that the greatest feeling?
I missed you. Yeah. Oh, I thought that thing was long gone. I thought someone ran off with it.
Yeah, my cousins had Paper Mario Thousand Year Door, and they were like,
"Ooh."
They're like, "I think this is yours. Do you want this?" I'm like, "Oh, yes."
Please.
Don't seem desperate.
Okay, so this disc in Japan was available on Club Nintendo, so you could use points to get it from there. North America, they did a bundle. They did a system bundle, and I believe it would have been like a silver GameCube, and then you get that game. You could also get it by renewing Nintendo Power at a certain time, or by registering a GameCube and two or more select games, which is what I did. I remember that now.
You know what? I may have done that. Because
the games
were
Double Dash, Mario Party 5, Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga, and 1080 Avalanche. It would have been Mario Kart and Superstar Saga for me, for sure.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, maybe that, or I don't know, because I re-upped Nintendo Power plenty of times just for stuff, like headphones or the Wind Waker shirt that I have, or, yeah, mostly Zelda stuff. So I bet I did the Nintendo Power route.
But yeah, that one, I remember the emulation on the 64 is not great. That one had some problems with the audio that got, it would crackle and things like that. I think in Majora's Mask, it was really bad on there.
Yeah, Majora's Mask is the one that people always complain about. I found it, yeah, I noticed it a little bit. People complained a lot about glitches with Ocarina, and when I was playing it for our episode about that collection, I honestly didn't find anything wrong. I found Ocarina played really well, but it also plays, you know, there's also a Master Quest that you can play it on too, which was a whole other thing.
Mm-hmm. Not on that one. That one doesn't have a
different disc
quest
on that. Though.
Right, yeah, yes.
That was the other one I was going to bring up. So there was the other one that here in North America, it was a pre-order bonus with Wind Waker. If you pre-order Wind Waker, you could get that at whatever. I think it was just like anywhere, really.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, yeah, that was... I got mine through... I think it was... I don't know if they had switched over to EB Games at that point, or they were still Electronics Boutique, but yeah, that's where I picked mine up.
But yeah, that one was Ocarina of Time and Master Quest. That was just those two games on that disc. And that was
where... the first time I'd ever had to start saying L targeting. It's like, I don't like this.
Yeah, that was the first time that a lot of people got to experience Master Quest, and we eventually got to see it again with the 3DS Zelda Ocarina of Time remake. But yeah, I remember playing through this and being real confused, but it was everything that I wanted. I remember reading in Nintendo Powers about Uru Zelda, about these things with the 64DD, and was so excited, and then never really knowing that, like, you know, I missed the reporting about that stuff getting canceled coming to the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so I just would hear about it and hear about it, and then it would just never come. It was the same with Tetris Trackers, mm-hmm. where I remember like reading about it, watching a video on it, and seeing all this stuff. And that's just like implanted in my brain where I was like, this is the next Zelda thing I need to be prepared for. And then it just never comes.
Yeah, I mean,
that must be ready.
That's the state of video games, though, back then, was just like the ability to just be like, no, that's just not going to come out. And no one really needs to know about it because this industry just isn't that big. And that was kind of the way that people thought about stuff. And same with like games coming out just in general. No one cared if the games had glitches in them or were broken, especially for a lot of these movie tie-in games. They're like, well, we just have to get this out. Who cares? And there's no Twitter for people to like go on and talk about their frustration about how Finding Nemo doesn't work on their console. It just was like, yeah. Right.
We had, whatever, dude. We had 6 months to make this game. Yeah.
And
we got it out.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's just a funny world. You know, it feels like it's so long ago, but it's only like less than 20 years ago for a lot of these games. Mm-hmm. But it was a completely different world in terms of the industry and obviously just technology in general, where it's things have changed so much.
And you also have Nintendo at this point, like having a massive change to the way their company works, in that Yamauchi and Arakawa retire around this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just kind of finding their footing again halfway through a generation that didn't start out as well as they would have hoped. So, yeah, trying to figure out like where they were going to go next was it's they threw a lot of stuff at the wall because they just were like, let's get through this. We've got some ideas for our next systems, but let's try things. I don't know.
That's why we did a podcast on this. Put out that Pac-Man game. Because there's just so many unique gems on the GameCube that people don't know about or talk about that much. Like it seems like every single franchise on the GameCube was completely reinvented. And I don't think we'll ever see something like that again.
Yeah, for sure. Why don't we go ahead and take a quick break? When we get back, we're going to talk about more GameCube games.
I'm Colette.
And I'm Matt.
It's time to talk about the most important topic facing humanity.
Climate change. Oh, okay, video games.
Every week on Colette and Matt Have Entered the Chat, we have in-depth conversations about the games we're currently playing.
We also talk to people who make video games, as well as YouTubers, writers, and podcasters that you already know and love.
We also talk about what you're playing when you join our community.
Subscribe to Colette and Matt Have Entered the Chat wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Do you love Japan and video games? Well, so do we. We're Kinsey and Mark from Kyoto Indie Dev's Chuhai Labs. Join us twice monthly for games, silly Japan news, and all-around nonsense. We stink at making commercials.
We f***ing got this one, bro.
Be sure to stop by the Chuhai Labs Discord to chat about our games or ask us questions.
Chuhai Labs and the Nasty Labs podcast. We're legally the best.
Class is back in session, and HyperX has the grade A gear you need for dorm life, remote classes, and for schooling folks online. Shop the HyperX back-to-school deals going on at HyperX.com to make your return to student life a breeze. Comfortable cloud headsets can keep you focused in as you cram for finals with some lo-fi beats and stay productive with lightweight pulse-fire mice, responsive alloy keyboards, and more. Keep your GPA and your KDA high with HyperX products and accessories.
So, we've talked about Wind Waker. We've talked about the Four Swords Adventures. We've talked about the Zelda promotional discs. There was a game that I mentioned at the beginning of this about it being sort of almost like a half game, because in my mind, it's a Wii game, and that is Twilight Princess. Were you going to say something?
Oh, no, I was just going to let you. Okay. I was going to let you finish your thought.
You were laughing.
Yeah. So this game, it was originally announced specifically for GameCube. At the time, we did not know about the Wii. We didn't know about the Revolution. We didn't know anything about it. Yep. So we had this trailer come out, and it was almost like a revolution on its own of doing these sort of convention trailers for video games that have this like almost like current Marvel MCU effect where that comes
it's a trope. It became a trope.
Yeah,
it did. Yep. You wanted to make this video that wasn't just announcing a game. You had to captivate your audience, and you had to like set them up to not realize what they were looking at. And then at some point you're just like, it's Link, it's a Zelda game, and it's going to be dark and blades will bleed and all of this. And there's like literally a video of like people screaming in reaction to this, like everyone freaking out. And of course I was one of them at that time.
Oh yeah. Oh, I lost it. You know what? I think I've just pinpointed the moment that E3 died. And that's when during live press conferences, when they stopped having the audience audio with what was happening on the TV, because they started eventually cutting away to just, if you're at home, you just hear what the trailer's audio is, but you used to hear both of them, and so you could hear people in the crowd losing their minds over certain things, and I missed that. I liked that little charming element to it.
It just it hypes you up so much, you know. it's like yes, I'm also getting excited about this.
I know that guy. That's Link.
That's Link. I love Link's adventures.
This game, in my opinion, was so much of a response to the criticisms of the look of Wind Waker, to the detriment of all of it. Like it. That game is ugly. Like, we ended up going from a very beautiful Zelda game to a very ugly Zelda game. And in my opinion, it's still, like, the ugliest Zelda game. We replayed that one just a year ago, and I played it on the Wii U, and even with its, like, updated visuals, and they cleaned some stuff up here and there, it's just a bland, ugly game. Like, just putting that out there.
Some very interesting character design, faces, five heads.
You're absolutely right. It was a direct response to Wind Waker, you know, and that criticism in every way. And yeah, to its detriment, for sure. It's too much. And I really do like the game itself. Like, I do love the gameplay. I love how, you know, Jeremy, you were saying how in Wind Waker you didn't really have many tools at all to use, and then in Twilight Princess you have everything. Like, you're given tools
a lot.
At
yes.
like every dungeon you have a new tool to use. And
you want a fishing pole? Here. You want this weird unholy chicken? Here.
Like, there, and that's also to its detriment as well, that there were too many tools, and there were so many cool things like the spinner. I don't know if you guys remember in one of the dungeons, there's like this little spinning top almost that you kind of jump to and fro from to go on these rails that it's going on this path, but it's really cool to use.
Dare I say extreme.
It's very extreme. But I think that's like the only time you can use it in the game. Maybe there's like one other time.
Not in an enjoyable way.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a big fault I had for Twilight Princess. We haven't actually covered Twilight Princess on our show. We're trying to go relatively chronological, so of course Twilight Princess will be at the very end, or basically at the end of the show. Madden 08 will actually be the last the last episode, because somehow a 2008 game got put on the GameCube.
I mean, it's pretty easy. You might as well just shove the PS2 version over there and not care how it plays.
I mean, hey, FIFA 14.
Oh yeah, that's sad. That's
on,
sad that
the PS2. So
yeah, that's sad that a Madden game killed the GameCube.
That's
what
did it.
So
yeah,
this...
that spinner. Aside from getting used to like turn gear systems, they never let you like shred on it ever again in that game, except for like maybe a couple spots in the overworld. It's a shame.
Yeah, so for me with this game, it's like I said, it's not a GameCube game for me. I got the Wii the day it came out. It came out on my birthday. I the week of my birthday has always been like aligned with like Nintendo releases in America. And so it's just been, it makes sense that I love Nintendo the way I do because I was like born into it. And so I was of course going to get Twilight Princess. I had to get the new Zelda game. And I know some things about what they did. It's weird that they released it like, what is it, 2 weeks or a week after the Wii one, because they still wanted, they wanted a gap. Like they didn't want it to like eat up its sales or something. Something maybe with sales
numbers.
Yeah, it
was strange.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
I don't know because I would have bought it.
Release date's bad. Because
I couldn't get it on the Wii. Weird. So yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. They it's, none of these games had like worldwide releases either, so they're always so staggered sometimes too. But yeah, that one was a weird one. I personally had it for GameCube. I actually never had this game for the Wii. I ended up playing it on my Wii a lot, on the GameCube.
Okay, yeah.
right.
The GameCube Slim.
GameCube Slim. It's two GameCubes. I've never heard that called that. That's great. But yeah, so this, the differences between these, obviously it doesn't have the pointing aiming that the Wii does. They also mirrored everything. Mm-hmm. The reasoning that they gave was they flipped the Wii one because they wanted Link's hand, who was a lefty at the time, to be on the right because most people were right-handed and they were going to be holding the Wii remote in their right hand when they did it. And that was their thinking with it. At least that's what they said.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm just like, I don't know why you'd mirror it. It's cool that later when we got this again on Wii U, that you get the option of playing it mirrored and unmirrored. And so it's, you know, for diehard Zelda fans that want 100% everything, it just gives you a whole new challenge with it.
I would love to be in the boardroom when they're trying to, like, someone realizes the problem that it's like, oh, Link's left-handed, but we need to have, you know, we need to have people, right-handed people, enjoy it. And someone just goes, what
all
if
the happy families in our promotional material play with their right hand?
What if we just flip it? And everyone's
it's
like,
the
okay.
Easiest. It's got to be the easiest fix. I mean, it, other than re-rendering a, you know, Link with the sword in his other hand and all of his attack animations and everything. You just flip it.
Yep.
Right. I don't like to, you know, talk about game development in this way typically because I'm not a game developer. I know it takes a lot of work, but this is one of those things where I think it is just like there's a drop down window that you just click that and it says mirror mode and it just flips everything. And it's like you don't actually have to put any work into it. It just does it.
It's the same one they use for, you know, Mario Kart 64 Extra or mirror mode in Double Dash. Like if you look at the signage, all the lettering's backwards.
Yeah.
This was an intern's job for sure over the summer. Like it was as someone who does do development, I can not game development, but it's the same kind of thing. It's an intern got to do this because it would have just been time consuming, but like, you know, just every, because you would have to probably do it for like a whole bunch of frames and then just I don't blend everything together or something, but yeah, it wouldn't have been hard but would have been time consuming, and so they're just like, okay,
yeah,
let's get some interns and let's just do this in a week.
So were there any other differences that I'm missing on here?
Camera,
like feature wise,
being able to control the camera fully with the GameCube, like with your joystick rather than the Wii.
So we lost something with the Wii.
Yeah,
that's not fair.
Well,
I didn't even think about that.
Honestly, the GameCube version is usually, I mean, I at least maybe I'm being rose-colored glasses a little bit, but usually people say that the better way to play it is on the GameCube. And I think so.
I had a roommate who had it on GameCube, mostly for the reason of no one's going to buy this on GameCube. So in 20 years, like,
well,
this is going to be worth a lot.
He was right, because it's worth.
I agree with you.
I think it goes for 80 or 90 now, roughly. A lot more than the Wii one.
I just don't even want to talk about the game collector market right now. It is ridiculous.
Oh, that's
it's bad out there, man.
Oh man,
we got that's, you know, that's one of our segments for all our games. We always talk about their price today, and yeah, we've We've seen a couple recently that were in the 200s, 300s, and we even got a $1,200 game, technically. So,
What's 1,200?
That is the Pokemon Box Ruby Sapphire, which technically isn't a game. And also 1,200 is like the low end because there's so few out there.
Is Bait and Kaitos one of the high-end ones?
Yeah, that one's up.
Because that one was really rare then when it came out.
I think that's at least 200. Because, yeah, that's anything that came out late for the GameCube, you know, anything past 2004, you're looking at least $100 for games that were relatively good.
I almost bought Bait and Kaitos, too, because Nintendo was heavily promoting it, and I would have done anything they asked me to at that point.
I bought that game when it came out, and I was like, what is this stupid game? I hate this. And then returned it.
We also, if you're interested, we also have Cubivore. That's up there. 700,
love
800.
Cubivore.
Gacha Force.
Oh, man.
I think that usually goes for close to 500. Same with Chibi Robo, which is a fantastic game.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is. I love that game.
I wish, like, Nintendo, you got to get on that and remake that in some form, because it's ridiculous that I have to either emulate it or pay $500 to play this game.
Mm-hmm. And the DS one is not good.
Why don't you play the knockoffs?
Oh, Ziplash? Oh my god, that is...
Oh no, not even the 3D. And I'm talking about like what is it? There's the Walmart exclusive one, and then there was the like there. So there's two DS
side scrolling one.
Yeah,
no, that's the 3DS.
That's Ziplash.
Okay,
yeah, that's Ziplash. There were two DS ones. There was also a 3DS photograph game that was like digital only. They're all bad. I don't understand why we can't even just get a port of the original Chibi Robo.
It's a Nintendo way.
I mean, it's like we for years, 30 years, people were asking for like another Master Blaster, and until the Switch, like they launched with like that Master Blaster Zero or whatever. every time they remade or, you know, tried to do a new take on Blaster Master, it was always the part of the game, the not Metroidvania part. It was always the top-down boring part. And everyone was
like, no, why don't you get it? There was the 3D one they did.
Oh, God.
That one was real bad. Anyway.
Come on, don't you get it?
Twilight Princess. So this game on the GameCube, we didn't really get any gimmicks with it, right? Like, this was just a straightforward action-adventure game. They kept the gimmicks on the Wii, basically, with the motion controls and all that. The GameCube sort of got the purest version of it, where it's just like, you're here to play a game, not get distracted with accessories. No one bought them, so we're not going to sell them to you right now.
You're here because you really wanted Ocarina 2, so
thanks
here
for
you
sticking
go.
With us.
Yeah.
Yeah, initially they did want to put it GameCube exclusive. Like that was the idea. It was supposed to release November 05, I think. And I think someone upstairs was like, guys, we cannot release this just for the GameCube. No one is buying this console in 2005. It is not working. We need to make our money back here. Like, we need to get something. So, you know, the waiting a year was obviously very smart, because they sold, I think, 2 million on the GameCube, a little more than 2 million. And then I think 6.5 or something on the Wii.
Yeah, that's
usually,
still not
they
a
usually
lot.
Usually hit
for
around
the Wii.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
by the time the Wii peaked, nobody cared about that game anymore, though.
It was the best-selling Zelda game, though, until Breath of the Wild, if you can believe it.
Yeah, I believe that. I mean, the power of the Wii, right? Like, you have to always think about that. So, I mean, you had a lot of good things to say about Wind Waker, Mike. What are your overall feelings on Twilight Princess?
So, I like the game. And I liked it a lot as a kid. I really enjoyed, you know, I loved the fact that I could kind of go wolf mode and everything. And it was, you know, definitely a darker game. And I think I was 14 at the time. So this definitely aligned with me in terms of like the kind of games I wanted to play. So I think at the time I really, really enjoyed playing this. And I don't know if you guys remember, but this is a T-rated game. This is a T-rated Zelda game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that. Yeah, you, no.
Yeah, yeah. If you take you remove the irises, man, it's automatic T rating. You know, that's too scary.
And I liked Midna a lot. I thought they they did a good job. Like Zelda always does a good job with characters, and I think that's maybe the one thing that they did keep going from Wind Waker. Like they kept that charm of the characters and that those expressions and everything. You always feel like you're part of a Zelda game, but I feel more so in Wind Waker and Twilight Princess. But I think the gameplay definitely got stale pretty fast. I think more so than Wind Waker, at least when I was playing it again not too long ago. But the worst part about it, like you said, Jeremy, is the graphics. Like it does look so, you know, like it looks like I'm in a dank cave like the entire time I'm in this. Like, give me some sunlight. Why doesn't it? Why is there no sun?
You can always
mold
just
on everything.
Right. You can always smell mildew when you're playing. Yeah, there's just always that smell. You don't know where it's coming from, but it's there.
Somebody leave their like a used towel in the corner or something.
But, when you were talking about the worst thing about it, though, I thought you were going to say the horse controls.
Oh,
because I don't know if you remember this. It's really bad.
That's awful.
I look forward to you to revisiting it because there's a reason why you want to be in wolf mode as much as possible, because the other way to get around quick is a pain.
Yeah, I was going to say the only thing I don't really remember riding Epona that much. I just remember being in wolf mode because that was obviously like the most fun way to play this game for the most part. So yeah, when I do a full replay for when we cover this probably later this year, I'll probably be putting my head in my hands and be like, oh God, why? Why, Nintendo?
Like, why is there no in-town speed for Epona? It's like you're in the tiniest little town and she's just like slamming into walls.
Oh, know what? I actually kind of do remember that.
Yeah, I think Midna is a really strong character, and maybe why the story is in these in Wind Waker and in Twilight Princess kind of stick around. I think in Wind Waker, for sure, that Link has the like best and clearest motivations of any Link.
Mm-hmm.
You could see how much he wants to help his friends and his family and save people and stuff, and you know, he's very expressive. But Link in Twilight Princess, not so much. He's just like, I'm a helpful farm boy, you know? But that role is filled by Midna. Midna is the like really dynamic character who you get to know and get to know her motivations throughout that game and ends up being a very believable character who I like a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she's one of like the best one of the best side characters for sure in all of Zelda. And I did want to touch on one thing too, is just like Nintendo in general with Zelda, and at this time, like in 2006, 2007, people forget Phantom Hourglass gets released just a couple months after Twilight Princess gets released. And Phantom mm-hmm. Hourglass, of course, on the DS, a direct sequel to Wind Waker. Like, this was, what was going on here? Like, what was going on in the boardroom? Was there like a compromise where people wanted to do a Wind Waker sequel? And they're like, no, we need to put this Twilight, we need to put this dark Zelda game out that we've been teasing since 2000. We need to put this on the GameCube.
Yeah. Yeah, Wind Waker 2 got canceled for Twilight Princess.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they were going to make another one, and I'm very upset that they didn't, because, we ended up with some DS, you know, games, throwaway games out of it, basically, because people weren't happy they didn't get their super serious Link. And yeah, it's kind of sad.
Yeah, no.
You might assume we were jaded by this knowledge with the way that we talked about Twilight Princess, even when we're covering it on our show and even here now. But like, it's just not, it doesn't hold up like the others. It really does. Like, it has some good gameplay.
It goes out with a bang, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, it's got the some end, great the moments.
Yeah, the I think Xant's castle and the Xant fight and the final Hyrule castle, all of that stuff is, I had a blast. But up until that point, I just felt like I was being led by the hand through the game, and was about over it at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is going to be a game, though, that just, you know, back to the Zelda cycle, I feel this is a game that's going to get talked about more and more and more as the years go on. People are going to go back to this and be like, oh, this, you know, I remember this being amazing, like one of the best Zelda games, and no one talks about it. And it's just going to be, it's going to be the popular one to say that it's their favorite. I can envision that in the future.
Well, I feel like we'll always get that because just as people get older, you know, it's like a Weird Al album. Like, you know, your favorite one is the one that came out when you were 10. So, yeah. We'll eventually hit a point where people who were way into Skyward Sword when they were 10 years old or played A Link Between Worlds and it just blew their mind. Because it blew my mind, too. Pretty great. Pretty great game. But, yeah, I feel like there'll always be some degree of, let's go back and look at this one. This was my favorite one with the wolf, because people have just kind of hit that age now.
Yeah.
We'll look forward to it. You'd scoff now at saying, no one likes Skyward Sword, but there will be people that fight for that game.
I mean, hey, they did the remake pretty well, and other than a couple of things, but not having to go through massive amounts of tutorials was very pleasant, which seems like every Zelda game, other than Wind Waker, which actually drops you in pretty fast, but it seems like every Zelda game always has
we gotta hang out with Nico.
a ton of tutorials. Like Twilight Princess is a slow, like it takes like an hour to really get into that game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that unfolds very slowly in front of you. And one of the reasons why, after I stopped playing Skyward Sword halfway through, that I was so hesitant to restart was because I knew everything that I had done, which I had torn Skyloft apart looking for stuff. Like, I had done everything. I had torn Skyloft apart looking for stuff. Like, I had done everything I possibly could, and looking at that disc again to be like, oh, I'd have to do that again. I want to play it, but I'd have to do all of that again.
Yeah.
So that was a big hindrance to me going back and finishing that game.
So I think we're getting close to wrapping this up. Is there any other Zelda GameCube thing that I'm not thinking of other than, you know, Smash Brothers, right?
Well, Soul
Calibur.
Which
was a big deal.
Soul Calibur 2.
Oh, right. Soul Calibur. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that for a second, I guess.
Yes.
That was a big deal. This was Soul Calibur 3?
2.
Correct? 2. Soul Calibur 2. And at the time, it had come out for PlayStation, Xbox, and GameCube. There was a lot of this was a big console war time, because in this era, like, we had PlayStation 2 was just dominating. Xbox comes in and it was a mess to start with, but there was so much horsepower in this console that it was eventually getting to a point where it's like you were getting the best visuals coming from this system. Meanwhile, GameCube sat in the middle and wasn't as good looking as the Xbox, still looked better than the PS2 games, but you also got the great Nintendo things off of there. So this game comes around and was one of few, if not the only game that had very specific exclusive things for each system.
Mm-hmm.
For each one. Because eventually we would get some like EA Sports titles that, you know, stuck Mario, Luigi, and
this
Peach
is true.
In there
and
stuff. But that was just like one off for the GameCube release.
This was for everything.
You know, that a lot of what I remember from Soul Calibur 2, a big part of that was the console war narrative around the game. Also, the game is just amazing. So whatever.
It is. It's the I have not played any other Soul Calibur game as much as I played that one.
Mm-hmm.
And it holds up today. It holds up very well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was a very pleasant surprise to play it again and realize, like, well, actually, the biggest thing, the sound design in that game is amazing. Like, again, played a lot of bad games for the GameCube in our time doing this podcast, and the sound is usually pretty compressed because this was 2002. But the sound for Soul Calibur, for whatever reason, it's like just so crisp and it just hypes you up. The music is amazing. Oh, it was really nice to see.
I have a lot of great memories with this, because when you would play as Link, he had these movesets that were all based on Zelda stuff. Like, you could do the downward sword stab with him. Mm-hmm. You would throw bombs in your boomerang. You could even customize his look too. You could give him like red tunic and all this stuff. Like, you could change the color of his tunic and everything. And
change his weapon. You could give him the Megaton Hammer.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. It was incredible. And it fit just, it was funny because this Link was very reminiscent of that original GameCube tech demo Link.
Yeah.
Way, right.
Yeah.
Like it's almost like that's what we were actually advertising, where the truth is they were going to put Ganondorf in there, but they had to drop him. And so we just got Link in it by himself.
Yeah. And which is interesting because, you know, this is a 2002 game. You know, this is a year before Wind Waker. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's, feels a bit of like cannibalizing your own market in that sense, because you're showing off this really cool, edgy 3D, looking Link who, yeah, looks basically like the Space World trailer and looks like a new and improved Ocarina Link. And then you get Toon Link, right? So I definitely would understand the anxiety from people seeing that, be like, no, look what we could have had.
I sold the best
on GameCube because of having that Link. So.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. I just always need to point this out with it. Like, the people that were complaining about this stuff at the time were teenagers. And, like, you know, when we're talking about, you look back at this as mature adults, at least. And you got to realize, like, they were complaining that it wasn't cool enough in the mid-2000s when everything was like alternative rock and like and chains and all this, like, you know, like all this edgy stuff. And this stood out and stood its ground of like, no, this is the game we want to make, and this is what we're going to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that all of that fighting happened, like I said, at schools or on, you know, message forums, because I've heard like Jeff Gerstmann talk about it. At the time he was at, you know, GameSpot.com, and people who were, you know, games critics or reporters or journalists or whatever, they just liked the game. They thought Wind Waker was pretty good and, you know, all that stuff. And I remember him saying on the Bombcast years and years later, like him basically finding out in the Bombcast, like, wait, like there was backlash? Like
it's such a funny clip. We can't say the expletives that he said on there, but it is such a great clip.
So good.
Yeah. And so like this was just people mad about their kiddie Zelda. And come on.
You know, now, do you guys know
we all grow up.
Do you guys know who was supposed to be on the PS2 version instead of Tekken, instead of Hayahachi?
Hayahachi?
I Crash know Bandicoot. I've heard this.
Snake.
No, unfortunately, Crash would have been fun. No, it was Cloud. Cloud was supposed to be.
Oh, that would have blown people's minds.
Yeah, early Smash.
How did that deal not happen? How did that fall apart?
Square was so precious back then, man. Like they were. I mean, there was something that happened where at some point they were like, actually, it's good for us to let people do whatever they want with our characters after seeing what Kingdom Hearts did.
Well,
where they were like, oh, put it in everything.
The reason why Square had a lot of issues at this time because Square went bankrupt.
Oh.
Because of
Children. The right. Movie.
Yeah.
And so that's why Crystal Chronicles exists for the GameCube, because they actually had a non-compete. So PlayStation said that you can't put games on the GameCube. You cannot work with Nintendo anymore. So they said, okay, that's fine.
We need you.
But then when they lost all their money, they had to ask Sony and say, hey, is it all right if we go back with our ex and put out games? And Sony said, okay, fine. You can put out games, but you can't put out mainline Final Fantasy games. And they said, okay.
You can't put out good games on the GameCube.
Well, there are other Nintendo systems, Jeremy, with good Square games.
Yeah,
there are, yes. But not the GameCube.
Yeah, just not the GameCube.
And Crystal Chronicles has the same thing as Four Swords with the multiplayer.
Speaking of crappy Link cables. Yep.
Great multiplayer just was a massive barrier to entry, once again.
They got there eventually.
Right. So I think we'll go ahead and wrap this up. This has been such a great trip down memory lane. I do still have... I'm not a nostalgic person, generally, but the GameCube is one of those that, like, I think about it, and I can just, like, feel that soft plastic in my hands, too. Like, I'm holding it, I'm holding the handle, you know, it's like, I don't even have to see it around me, but I can just feel it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for coming on, Mike. If listeners wanted to hear more from you, where could they go?
They can find our podcast, The GameCube Was Cool, on literally every podcast service. So if you're using some random obscure service, I'm sure we're on there somehow. But obviously Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, all that stuff. We also are on all the social medias. You can find us most on Instagram. We also have a Discord, too. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook a bit, too. So, yeah, check us out. And, yeah, thank you very much, guys, for having me on today.
Yeah. Also want to throw out the Good Pods. This is a new app that we just came across that we're wanting to put more on there. And we know you're on there as well. So go on there as well. It's maybe you're looking for a new social media. Who knows? Check out the Good Pods app.
I've been looking for something or hoping someone would make something like that for years, just like a little social platform just for sharing podcasts around. And yeah, it's kind of cool. I like it.
Brian, you want to throw in a plug real quick?
Yeah, hey, listen to Need for Speedrunning, my show about speedrunning. Yeah, I don't need to plug any specific upcoming episode because this won't come out for a while.
It's going to be a bit. No,
and you can all listen to, you're on a couple of our episodes. What was the last episode you were on for our show?
I stopped by to talk, not Pikmin 2. Phantasy Star Online.
Fantasy Star Online. That was a fantastic episode. That was really fun. We even had a moderator on who... He's the main moderator of the Fantasy Star Online Discord, because Fantasy Star Online
runs
still has servers up today.
He runs the GameCube servers, basically.
So
when you said, like, oh yeah, we're gonna talk to a guy who does this after you, I was like, I want to listen to that. That sounds great.
Yeah, it was really cool to have him on. He just had like a ton of knowledge about the game, and you know, that's just something Neil and I were not big RPG fans necessarily, but we're really interested in something, especially like an MMO for the GameCube, because why, like, how did that exist back then? So it was really awesome to have him on.
Yeah, love that game.
Great. Once again, Mike, thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking Zelda. This has been so great. Thank you all listeners for listening to us talk as well. We'll see you next time.
See you later.
Bye. Hey everybody, welcome to Chat of the Wild. This game is a series of podcasts where we talk about Zelda. And we're not talking about a specific game today, or really introing the show well at all. But I will be your somewhat host today, Luigi's Apartment. No, I'm doing this all wrong. I'm on a different show, aren't I?
Are you all right? You want me to get it going?
Yeah, go for it. I was keeping the bit going, and then I messed up like a fourth time and was like, no, this is done.
It's too much.
We're done here. It's not working out.
Okay. Mike, what's your last name?
Lane.
Lane. Okay. And then it's the GameCube Was Cool podcast. That's how you'd like it said.
That's right. Yep.
All right. Here we go.